role. Praise the Lord. And even this tape is going to be distributed to many places. Okay, let's go ahead and get started now. And we're going to start with session number 2 of Discovering Your Motivational Gifts.
In this session 2, we're going to start looking a little bit more deeply into the motivational gifts. And we'll try and cover a couple of things. We're going to first of all look at some of the instinctive characteristics that are a part of each of the 7 gifts. And then we're going to come back or back up a little bit, and we're going to look at some of the barriers or problems that we have as we're expressing the gifts. Okay, instinctive, and let me go back over this. When we talk about instinctive, we're talking about something that's a part of you. You do it instinctively. Just say you're the type of... No, that would be a bad example. Just say that you're the type of person who gets up every time a woman comes into the room. After a while, you sort of like do it instinctively. It's a way of honoring the woman. True? Okay, well, when we talk about instinctive here, we're doing it a little bit different. It's like the geese who fly south during the winter and north during the summer, I hope, or something like that. It's that instinctive, inborn nature that God has given us. So let me give you some examples from each of the gifts that lead you to understand the instinctive parts of the gift. The prophet. One of the most instinctive parts of a prophet is their mouths. They talk loud, they tend to be dramatic when they talk with their... I'm not a prophet, I promise you I'm not a prophet. They talk with their hands, and they tend to be very, very verbal people. They're very blunt. They stand out in a crowd. Of all the gifts that you will be trying to assess or discover about people, one of the problems you will not have is figuring out who the prophet is. You'll know it immediately. Very distinctive. They're very blunt. Everything to the prophet is right or wrong. There's no gray area in between. If a person goes out here and they're hungry and they steal from their neighbor and they come back to a prophet and they said, you know, my family was starving to death, so I went next door and stole my neighbor's food. The prophet can say, no, 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 you don't do that. A mercy may come along and say, oh, that's okay. Well, it's not exactly right to do that, but the prophet can say, no, you're wrong. Take it back. Add 5 times to it. Sort of like what the Bible says. But that's that characteristic about the prophet. Very blunt. Things are right or wrong, and there's nothing in between. Everything is viewed in the world and from those 2 dimensions. And because that's true, the whole area of gray is left out. And so they feel very uncomfortable in the gray world. I mean, gee whiz, who has principles these days? So they walk around amidst people who have no principles, and they're very uncomfortable with that because God creates in them and that instinctiveness about everything is either right or wrong. You're starting to see people, remember people in your lives who are like that? Everything's right or wrong. Okay, a prophet, what do we know about a prophet? They're verbal, and their instinctive part of them is to be very blunt with what they say. They hurt people's feelings, sometimes intentionally, sometimes they do it so much that it's totally unintentional on their part. They just do it. That's how they were made. And once we realize God made them that way, there's a purpose behind that, then we start seeing it from God's perspective. But a little later on, we will talk about why it's so important that they're like that. So that's the prophet. The next one is the teacher. What's instinctive about a teacher? What do they do that's instinctive? Well, the teacher has this need, this drive inside to repeat themselves. And they repeat themselves incessantly. And they will tell the same stories. They will tell the same jokes. You saw them last week and they told you about their mother-in-law. And you come in and they're telling you about their mother-in-law. And you just wonder what happened in between. Nothing. They keep repeating themselves. But it's instinctive. God built it inside of them to repeat themselves. And you say, well, what does that got to do with a gift, or how does that help help a person who is a teacher? The teacher doesn't mind repeating themselves. And so if they're teaching a child, they don't mind sitting in the floor and going over with that child over and over and over again. 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 = 4. How much is 2 + 2? 4. As long as the teacher feels that the child is learning, then it sparks in themselves the need and the desire to repeat it. So they continually had this drive within them, next to reading when they come out of the womb, they had this drive within them to repeat themselves. Again, like the prophet, they're a leader and they're verbal. So the prophet and teacher are verbal. The prophet sees everything black and white. Now, one of the secondary characteristics of the teacher is they tend to be like that too. They tend to see things black and white, but not nearly as much as a prophet does. But they do have that two-dimensional world. That's the prophet and teacher. Organizer. What's instinctive about an organizer? How can you identify an organizer? A couple of things. One, they write notes to themselves. You walk in their house, they're on the bed, they're on the refrigerator, they're on the doors. They're everywhere. They just write incessant notes to themselves to remind themselves of things they need to do. It's instinctive with them. I don't know what they do if they can't write, but they have this need to write it down, and so it's everywhere. That's part of it. The other thing that's instinctive and very important about the organizer is that they have this need inside for loyalty. And you want to burn them, you be disloyal to them. Oh, that will burn them bad. They will have nothing else to do with you. They will mark you off a list. That's it. If they have given you something to do, they've asked you to do it, you've agreed to do it, and you come back next week and you haven't done it, they got this little black book, and they turn around, they mark your name off, and that's it. You're gone. Never again. They won't trust you again. They won't have anything to do with you. They'll mark you off. They'll forget. It's instinctive with them. They have this real drive inside, a real need for loyalty on the part of other people. Okay, the organizer, like the teacher and like the prophet, is a verbal person. They usually have the ability to lead, and they make fact is, they make natural-born leaders. They're very good in their ability as far as leading is concerned. But this writing notes to themselves and this desire for dependability, for loyalty on their part, is instinctive. And it's very critical to them when they experience it with other people. Okay, that's the prophet, teacher, organizer. I'm sort of being a teacher for you right now because I keep repeating these things. But part of the purpose behind that, I don't want to bore you to death and let you go to sleep. That's not the purpose. The purpose is I keep repeating them, and after a while you're going to know prophet, teacher, organizer. What's the next one? Exhorter. These four, prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter, make up the four gifts that are leaders, and they're verbal. Okay, what's instinctive about an organizer? They hate telephones. You heard me. I hate telephones. And I think they should have crucified Mr. Bell before he ever got his telephone. You see, what happens with an exhorter is they want to talk to you face to face, eyeball to eyeball. They want to see your face. They can't see your face and they miss half the conversation. And it's very irritable to them. It's instinctive. They have no choice. We have no choice. We hate the phone. We hate the mail. We want to talk to you face to face. I'll drive across town, 40 miles across town, to talk to somebody face to face. My wife will say, why didn't you just call on the telephone? I mean, it was just a simple question. No, I got to talk to them face to face. And exhorters have this tremendous drive inside. They want to communicate face to face. And so, in our highly technological world, why do you think they're adding all of these camera abilities to telephones? Well, because there's some more exhorters that just couldn't put up with a telephone. that's not necessarily the whole reason, but it does give you an eye why there's always been that drive as far as the telephone is concerned. One, it's verbal, but there's something that's left out. So if you're an exhorter and you're starting to say, yeah, that's what I am. I have to talk to the person face-to-face. I just don't like talking on the phone. And they call me, and I want to get over as quickly as possible and hang up and go back and lay down. Leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you on the phone. But they'll talk for you hours with you face-to-face, but don't even ring me on the phone. Any of you feel that way? No, of course not. Don't have any exhorters here, do we? Prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter. Characteristics that are characteristic of each one of them. They all have the ability to lead. That doesn't necessarily mean they always exercise that, but they always have the ability. They're verbal. When they talk, for the most part, you understand what they're saying. Now, I'm an exhorter. If I start pronouncing words like, or mispronouncing words like, aluminum, I still can't pronounce it correctly after 50 years, that doesn't mean you can't understand the rest of it. There's just some words I can't pronounce. But for the most part, what I say, you can understand, right? Yeah. Is there anybody that doesn't understand? Yeah, there's some servers in here. Okay. No. Prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter, leadership, verbal, very important. Breaking it down, it makes it easier. Four on this side, three on this side. Okay, what's on this side? Well, we have the giver, we have the mercy, we have the server. What's instinctive about the server? They can't talk. Well, they talk all the time, but you can't understand a thing they say. When I say that, I don't mean it's not like they speak a different language. It's that they put words together that don't belong together. Or they put ideas together. And, I mean, maybe you're going through the country and you're talking about what a beautiful moonlight it is. And they start talking about trees. And you say, what's trees got to do with the moonlight? They change subjects on you. And they got this conversation running in their head. And you don't know what that conversation is, but they sure do. And then when they get through with the conversation, they said, don't you agree? I don't know what you're talking about. The Lord's really helped me in the mate that He has given me in that respect. As I said, she's a server through and through. But her father was a server. And one of the problems that she had growing up with her father was that he was wanting, well, first of all, he had four daughters and he wanted four sons. But besides that, he was a server and he would want things done and he would expect them to read his mind and know what he wanted done and do it without him saying a word. And he was disappointed when they didn't. And she would get her feelings hurt. By the way, they tend to be instinctively, servers are very sensitive people. But instinctively, this nonverbal ability, they find it very difficult to express things in a way that other people can understand them because they live half of it out. Instinctive. Another instinctive quality about the server. Fact is, I'm going to get carried away, I'll give you two. One, they're very manually oriented people. They're physically oriented people. They do things with their hands. They make excellent craftsmen because they take their hands and their minds and the two work together, and they're able to construct some of the most beautiful things. They have ability with their hands that's just phenomenal. The other thing that's instinctive about them is their memory. They have a phenomenal memory for small details. I had an aunt who just died this last year who was a server. She was 84. And she could sit there and rattle off my birthday and my brother's birthday and my sister's birthday and my mother's birthday and aunts and uncles all the way down, people I didn't even know. And I would sit there. I can hardly remember my brother's birthday, and here she knows it. How does that happen? Because they have this instinctive thing inside that remembers small, important details about other people. And God just seems to lay it in their hearts, and they have this unique memory. It's instinctive with them. I've tried. I can't develop it. That's one quality I'd like to be able to develop, but so far I just haven't been able to do that. The server is born inside them. It's inborn with them. And they have that unique ability. But the server is a non-verbal person. They're not leaders. One of the worst mistakes that an employer can make is make or promote a person who is a server to a leadership position. One day, they're doing the best job in the world. They work 18, 20 hours a day. They get all the work done. It's done right. It's done in a way that it makes everybody happy. And so the employer said, this guy does an excellent job. I'm going to promote him, put him over all these people. And the next day, he comes in, and he's a total failure. Why? He's not a leader. They are not leaders. You leave them where they're at. That don't mean you don't recognize them, but or you don't promote them in some other way. You just don't make them leaders. They are non-leaders. They do not do well in a leadership position. Okay, that's the server. The second one is the mercy. What's instinctive about the mercy? I've already told you. Slow. Slow. They talk slow. They walk slow. They're always late. You have to prod them, push them, whatever. They never seem to get anywhere on time. They're very slow. That's instinctive. They have no control. How does that affect discipline with a child particularly? If you have a child who's a mercy and you're a prophet or you're or server, and this child is slow, and you start harassing the child, why do you take all day to mop the floor? Do it in 2 minutes. No, takes them all day. And so you harass them, you harangue them, you criticize them, and the next day you come in and it still takes all day to wash the dishes. They're slow. God created them that way for a very unique purpose. You see, our minds and our emotions and our physical bodies are three different instinctive parts of us. And the mercy has a radar system that is continually searching the people around them for their emotions, for their feelings. They are hypersensitive to the feelings of other people. Well, if you're hypersensitive to the feelings of other people, it's going to affect how fast you work. You can shove them all day long and it's not going to help. But what is going to help is to realize we're from God's point of view, the gift that God gave them, and recognizing how valuable it is. It's very valuable that they're slow. How do you know that it's valuable when they're slow? Well, you're laying in the hospital, or your parents dying, or you have a sick child, or your wife has left you instead of your husband. Your wife's left you, and you need somebody to talk to, and you call the mercy on the phone, and they come over. There's nothing. They have nothing else to do. They have nothing to do but listen to you. And you sense that they've shut off the whole world. They shut out everybody else and everybody else's problems, and their whole world is centered on you. They want to listen to you. And when you walk away, you feel this real relief from the burden. Mercy walks away with all the things you just gave him. But that's part of being a mercy, and we'll talk about what mercy is supposed to do with that. But that's instinctive with the mercy. Mercy is nonverbal. They have the problems with being verbal just like the server does. The server's nonverbal. Both of them are not leaders. They don't do well in a leadership position. That doesn't mean that sometimes they can't. For instance, like with a server is the one of the seven gifts that can function in all seven gifts at a very shallow level. Every once in a while, I'll throw out an extra detail. It's not in your books. They can function at all of in all the gifts at a very shallow level, but not at a very depth level, deep level. Okay, each one of them have these characteristics. Nonverbal. Server's physical. Mercy's emotional. The third one is the giver. What's the giver? Well, besides money, what's instinctive about the giver? The most instinctive factor about the giver is they tend to be very secretive. What was that? They tend to be very secretive. Anything that you get at them, you got to dig it with a pick, because they aren't going to volunteer anything. They never know what the left hand know what the right hand is doing. They're very secretive people, and it is very difficult to get things out of them. Not only are they secretive, but because they don't want you to know that they're a giver, they frequently mask themselves as a server, which really makes the job difficult if you're trying to figure out what they are, because for 10 years you're calling them a server, and all of a sudden you realize they're not a server, they're a giver. They mask themselves to fool you as you're a server. They just do it automatically. So, characteristics, instinctive characteristics is what we're talking about. Instinctive characteristics of the gifts. Let's back up a second. What are the gifts on this side? What are the leadership gifts? What four are they? Prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter. prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter. Prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter. I don't know what that spells, but it's supposed to spell something. Prophet, teacher, organizer, exhorter. Got to get it in your mind. Okay. What's on this side? Giver, server, mercy. Server, giver, mercy. Mercy, server, giver. Nonverbal. Verbal. Nonverbal. Verbal. What does the teacher do instinctively? They repeat themselves. It drives you crazy. What am I doing? Repeating myself. I'm driving you nuts. But when it's over, you got the lesson, don't you? I mean, my mother drilled into me 1,000 times. No, it was probably more than 1,000 times. 4 times 4 is 16. And by the time she drilled it into me 100,000 times, I got 15, but I finally got to 16. No, over and over again. That's instinctive with them. What's instinctive with a prophet? Blunt. Hurt your feelings. They're going to do it right off the bat. Hurt your feelings. They're going to ask you embarrassing questions in front of those embarrassing people. They'll ask you about your sex life. They'll ask you about your children. They'll ask you what drugs your children. I mean, they will embarrass you by the questions they ask you or the things they tell you. It's instinctive with them. A mercy wouldn't even consider asking you an embarrassing question. They won't do it. They don't want to hurt your feelings. They'll sort of slip in beside you and say, "What kind of problems are you having today? Tell me all about them." And but they don't get out in front of the world and announce, "You got a problem with drugs." Nope. That's not what do you see? Opposite extremes. That's the other characteristic or trait about the gifts. They are opposite. Each one tends to have an opposite gift that counterbalances. Prophets, blunt, outspoken. Mercies on the other extreme, they wouldn't hurt you for anything. Well, I take that back. If you hurt the feelings of a friend of a mercy, you're in for it. They will go after you. Other than that, they'll leave you alone. Mercies are kind, gentle people. Prophets, very loud, brag, blunt, hurt your feelings. Starting to connect the two, prophets and mercies, they're the opposite extremes. It's important, very important. Let me give you an idea of why it's so important. Do you know who marries most often? Prophets marry mercies. Oh, yeah, they marry mercies. They come in, they sit down, and they say, "My husband criticized me from daylight to dawn. I mean, he never leaves me alone." And the prophet is sitting there, "This woman, she drives me. It takes her forever to say anything. It takes her forever to do anything. She just drives me." They marry each other. Opposite attracts. So I'm telling you the truth. 70% of the time, I go back, I give my clients tests. First thing I want to know is, for sure, what's your gift? And I'll tell you, they come in and the prophet opens the door and I said, "Oh no, they're married to a mercy." I know what the problem is right off the bat. But that tells you something. You walk into a home, the people are having problems, one's a prophet and one's a mercy, and you already know half of the solutions to their problems. The other half's getting them to do it, but you already know what half of their solutions are, what the problems are, and then it's getting them to do this. Do you see how it helps? Once you know, and that's what we're talking about, and that's what we're trying to acquire for ourselves, once we know, whose mobile phone is that? Who's got a phone in here? Okay, see, I'm acting like a prophet, and that's something that I'm wanting you to see. I'm going to try as I go along. I'm not a very good actor. In fact, I'm a very poor actor. Very poor. My wife tells me that all the time. But I'm going to try and portray for you verbally and non-verbally how these gifts act. So that's why when I talk about the mercy being slow. Right. See, you're getting it. Then you start to catch on. So when I slow down, you know what I'm saying. I'm talking to the mercies in the group. And by the way, there is a significant percentage of the people who are mercies. You know what that number is? 30% of any population are mercies. Gee whiz, 30%. I guess God knew that we needed somebody to hear our problems because He created so many of them. 30% of any given population is a mercy. Who is the kind of people who will not show up in my office? Anybody want to guess? No, I get plenty of prophets. Prophets love to come. You can't, no exhorters like counseling. Exhorters are counselors. You can't drag a giver in there. The givers will, they're secretive. They don't want to come into, are you kidding? They don't want themselves to know, plus anybody else to know who and what they are. They're secretive. There ain't going to be no givers sitting in there on my couch. They're not going to be there. The other two types of people who generally do not like counseling or do not do well in counseling, or if they come, it's only for brief counseling, are the physical people. That is, we're introducing another term. I'll slow down and I'll be repetitive. The organizer and the server are physical people. They interact with the physical world around them. The mercy interacts with the emotional world, right? The prophet interacts with the emotional world, but the organizer and the server interact with the physical world. They're good with their hands. It's instinctive with them. If that be true, what does the exhorter do? The exhorter has the ability to bridge the gap between the physical and the emotional worlds, in the mental world. The exhorter can operate in the intellectual world, in the emotional world, in the physical world. At least they can do the translations. They don't make very good workers, but they sort of sit around doing other things. But they have this unique ability to translate for you. So what you have is the servers and organizers, common characteristic. They're opposites, but a common characteristic between with the organizers, it's instinctive with them, and the servers, is that they're physical people. They like doing physical things. They're uncomfortable in an emotional world. The kid who crawled under the desk that I was telling you about in session one, he was a server. Didn't like emotional conflict. If you look back in your own lives, your parents were fighting, or maybe you didn't have parents, or they didn't fight, or one of the two. But just say you had parents who fought, or there was a lot of stress going on in your time and you're growing up, and you said, every time there's a stressful situation going on, I either went outside or I went to the back room, shut the door, crawled under the bed, and put a pillow over my head. I didn't want to hear it. More than likely, you're either an organizer or a server, if that's true of you. So what I'm telling you, what you need to write down, and what you need to remember is one of the distinctive qualities that starts separating these people as you're listening to them, if they're physical, then they're either an organizer or a server. If they're emotional, prophet or mercy. If they're intellectual, exhorter or teacher. What's a giver? They're an oddball. They could be anything. They're secretive. You don't know. Let me stop for just a second. I need to make sure that you're understanding what we're talking about. Any questions? You want me to go back over any part of that? You understand it all the first time? Prophet and mercy. 70% of the time they marry each other. What's after that? Well, after 30 years of marriage, they start getting along. That's what you ask. You said, what's after that? After 30 years of marriage, what happens with a prophet and mercy? Very good question. I know that's not what you asked. Very good question. What happens with a prophet and mercy after they've been married 30 years? If you start looking at them, you start seeing that the prophet starts acting like the mercy. They start taking on some of that gentleness from the mercy. They don't want to, but they do. What does the mercy do? Well, after 30 years, they can finally start disciplining their children. They can finally say, no, you're not doing that, kid. But that's after 30 years living with a prophet. Ask your question again. I'll see if I can answer it the right way this time. I forgot. I really forgot. My memory is going. I'm getting too old. My memory's. Say that again. Intellectual. The intellectual. The two who are the intellectual. Good job. You're good at reminding me. The teacher is the intellectual. Remember, they like to read. That's intellectual. They love to pick up a dictionary and start reading. They love to pick up an encyclopedia. They just love them. They just read, 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 read. Exhorters like the intellectual world. They respond in an intellectual way. They do a lot of things in the intellectual world. They're very comfortable with the intellectual world. At the same time, the exhorter is very comfortable with emotions. And so they're able to sit down with you and talk to you about problems because they're very comfortable about that. But at the same time, they can sit back and they analyze the problems and they can help you with the solutions. a little bit different with the mercy. Just say you have a counselor who's a mercy. The mercy is going to sit there and listen to you and take the pain off, but they're not very good at giving you the steps to take. It's the exhorter that's able to do that. So the exhorter and the teacher, intellectual abilities. Organizer and server, physical abilities. Who's got the emotional abilities? Prophet. See, you're catching on. You see, this repeating thing does work, doesn't it? You repeat it, you hear it over, and this is just the beginning. You're going to hear this stuff over and over again. I've decided that one of the best ways to teach this is to keep holding up all seven of them, let you grasp all seven of them at the same time, see how they interact, see how they talk, see how they work with each other, and then you just keep adding characteristics and traits, and after a while you understand each one of them very thoroughly, and you understand something about yourself in the process. Okay, what we've been talking about is the instinctive. These are things that are instinctive with them. It's inborn with them. It's very rare that you will see a person who is displaying a secondary gift who does it in an instinctive way. Now, I need to describe that for you because it's very important. One of the things that's going to be confusing for you is you're looking at yourself, you're looking at your parents, you're looking at your children. It'll be very easy for you to narrow down what their gift is, down to two. In other words, if they're physical, it'll be kind of easy to see they're either a server or organizer. If they're emotional, you'll be able to see that they're a prophet or a mercy. If they're intellectual, the teacher or the exhorter. That'll be easy to see. But then how do you decide which of the other two they are? That becomes more difficult. Or do you say they're displaying other characteristics or other qualities? How do you go about discerning that? That becomes a little bit more difficult. And it's the instinctive part that you focus on. Once you instinctively, I mean, the prophet, what do they do? What's the prophet do? Blunt. Yeah. Hurt your feelings. Blunt. They just speak it out. It's instinctive with them. They talk before they don't think about what they talk about. They just talk about it. Right? Okay, it just comes out of their mouth. That's instinctive with them. You're not going to change it. So when we talk about instinctive, that's what we mean. It's instinctive. Contrast that with secondary. Just say you have a prophet over here who is kind and gentle. I can't think of any, but just say you have one, a prophet over here. Oh, yeah, maybe they're 70 years old and they're kind and gentle. How did they acquire that, being a prophet? Well, probably lived with a mercy all their lives. That's one way they acquired it. But another way of acquiring it is the prophet looks at these qualities of a mercy and they say, God created these qualities in a person. Up until this period of time in my life, I haven't liked that or haven't wanted to do that, but God created it, so it must be important. So they take those seven characteristics that you have in your books, and one by one they say, Lord, help me be a gentle person. Show me how to deal with this situation in a gentle way. Help me to put aside my harshness and be gentle with this person. And so they acquire this mercy gift, but it's acquired, it's learned, and they had to struggle for it. It's not instinctive. Do you see the difference? Instinctive, secondary. You had to work at it. That's one way you get it. A second way you get it. You're raised with a parent who has a different gift that you have than you have, and you admire that person. You admire your parent, or it could be a significant other person, but you admire. Just say you are a teacher. Most of the time, a teacher is very intellectual, non-emotional. But just say they're raised with a mercy, a mother who's a mercy, and they really admire that mercy. Well, they will start to take on some of those qualities from their mother because it just does something to them. They live with them. Another way to get it, this is a hard way or easy way depending on how the minister looks at it, but several years ago I'd held a seminar at this large congregation, and I had noted that the minister was a prophet. Very verbal, very black and white, very blunt. I mean, you're starting to get the point now, right? You understand what a prophet is. You can imagine how much hollering he did. I don't know what your ministers are here, but you can imagine what this one was. Very verbal. And I had given this test to probably about 300 or 400 people. And I graded it on a computer, which can't think. And lo and behold, this computer did something that was stupid. It started rating all these 300 people real high with these prophet characteristics and said, how is this happening? What's happening here? They had listened to that preacher for so long that they were starting to take on some of those characteristics of the preacher. And I said, well, this is just an anomaly. It just happened with a minister and this particular one because he's a prophet. And the Lord said, no, that isn't how it works, Jerry. That's not how it works. And so a couple years later, I was at this other congregation, and I graded these tests with a computer, the same dumb computer. No, in fact, it was a faster computer. It made the same mistake. Well, this time it wasn't prophets. I had a whole host of people. I mean, givers make up 6% of the population. 6%. There must have been 200 people in this congregation who took the test, and I would say 60% of them were scoring between 40 and 60% as givers. I said, that's not possible. How is this happening? And it came about that one of the elders of that congregation was a giver, and the people loved him because of how open and generous he was with them and how he treated them. And lo and behold, they copied him, and they took on themselves the characteristic of a giver. You see how it works? And so, but these people who took this on, they weren't really givers, but they started taking on these secondary qualities, and God just seemed to emphasize it in their life. And one thing I'll say about that, this seems to happen more with Christians than in non-Christian groups. It seems that the Christians seem to take on more of these secondary qualities. It seems that they develop it more, and they become more intense than the non-Christian people that I deal with, or the non-Christian world that I deal with. Maybe I'll go into a business and they're using the test to determine something about their employees who best does a job, and that'll be something I hope you really find interesting. Yeah, well, I'm off the subject. I'll go ahead and give you an example. I'll tell you what, if Marcia Clark had known anything about the gifts, she would have selected a far better different jury than she did. You know what she would have done? She would have filled that jury with prophets. Now, as it was, I think they were all mercies. But just say you're an attorney. You have a knowledge about the gifts. You walk in, you say, my client's guilty. I need a bunch of mercies so they won't find him guilty. You got it made. They're going to have a hard time reaching a guilty decision against the person unless he has hurt somebody that they're close to, or unless he's hurt a child. And then they pick the wrong ones. But I'm wanting to point out, your occupation is affected by your gift. Very much so. Just say you're a salesman. You have a knowledge about the gifts. Gee whiz, you walk in, within 15, 20 seconds, you know what the gift is of the person you're trying to sell something to. Sorry, you're at his mercy, because he's unlocked the door to your heart. He's unlocked the door. He knows the things that motivate you. He knows the things that get you up off of your seat and that get you up doing something or buying something. And you're very vulnerable to him. The more you know about the gifts, the more you understand them. Not only do they help you in the Christian world, they help you in the business world. I'm sorry I got sidetracked with that. That was supposed to be 4 or 5 sessions down the road. And now that I'm off the track, I don't remember where I'm at. So we'll stop and we'll say, it's question time. Get me back on the track. What questions do you have? Yes. Wait just a second. That's the kind of mistake I make.
Is it possible for a person to possess characteristics from the various gifts from one extreme to the other?
Let me make an example out of you. Did y'all notice how slowly he spoke? I don't know anything about him. I hadn't given him a test, but the first clue in my mind is, I wonder if this person's a mercy. Do you see how the information is useful? I'm sorry, because you got me off the track on that. You're going to have to ask the question again, because I immediately keyed into the fact, I wonder if you're a mercy. Try it again. Say it.
Is it possible for a person to possess various...
Now he's covering up that he's a mercy once something.
I'll speak up when I have to.
The characteristics from the various gifts, from one extreme to the other.
Okay. Let me give you an example of that, but I won't go into detail. Yes, sometimes the humor of God is something else. For most of us, we have a primary gift. We're most intense in that area. If we're taking tests and we're a very good practicing Christian, we're walking close to God, we're going to score 70, 80, 90% on that test in that area. If we have a strong secondary gift and we're practicing it, it's going to show real high on that score because we're practicing those, but it's still secondary. However, just say that God has given you parts of two gifts. Then what happens? Well, then what you have inside is instinctively those parts of those gifts. I say humorous or can be sad, depending on how it uses it. My Lord gave me an example in my own life. My daughter, he bestowed on her two gifts, a prophet and a mercy. And you want to know something that tears a person apart. So you having one gift that says, be harsh, another one says, be gentle. You can imagine what it is. But evidently, he's taken certain qualities under the prophet list, instinctively, taken certain qualities under the mercy gift, put the two together, and here she goes. And you can sit back and you can see and work. Sometimes she's blunt. Sometimes she's real gentle. She'll start crying about the problems that a person's having, and you'll say, is this the same person that was up there preaching at him a while ago? But yes, that sometimes the Lord does that. It's not as often as we may think. Most of the time, it's secondary gifts that we're seeing, but sometimes he takes two, and rarely more so, is he'll take three, parts of three gifts. Why does he do this? It is my belief that while we were formed in the womb, God decides what he wants to use us for. And he gives us the gift that he is going to need us to have to prepare us when we're 40 years old and we start using that gift and we start serving him in a very real, productive manner. We needed that gift, and we've had 40 years to practice it, 40 years to learn how to use it effectively, and now God has called us to finally put those things to work. Answer the question? I finally answered a question. Okay. Next question.
Okay. Isn't it also possible that you can have one gift? Let's say, you're one person like at work, and then you have, and then at work and at home,
true.
You're something.
Now,
totally different.
Let me tell you what that is. What happens is, what you do is, you walk out of the house, and all for the last 16 hours that you were home, you were practicing all the negative attributes of your gift. You walk out of the house, you go to the job, and you practice every one of the positive characteristics, and they'll swear you're a different person. Yeah, that's what happens. That's exactly what happens. When we're at home, when we're among our people in our family, and we have problems, we tend to let those negative things come out more often. When we get away from our family and when we're in a business or a church situation, then we tend to the positive attributes. That is most often what happens. Sometimes you have a little bit of the other going on, but most of the time it's this negative positive thing that's going on, characteristics that's going on as far as the gifts are concerned. Very good question. By the way, what would you suppose her gift is? She's only asked one. I better not ask that. Y'all know her better than I do. What's your gift?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Between an exhorter and a giver.
Oh, well, that's a big gas. That's a big gap. Well, let's try it this way. If you think you're a prophet, raise your hand. Don't want to admit it? We've only got one prophet. No. There's 13% of you people who are prophets. Get those hands up. Okay, you're prophets. So there's some of you that's already identified. Okay, any givers, anybody that thinks they may be a giver because of their secretiveness, raise your hand. One, either mercy or giver, that's possible. You think you may be? Okay. Okay, how about teachers? We have any teachers, anybody that's identified themselves as teachers? Very good. Yeah. Any servers in here? Yeah, 17% of you are going to be servers. You better believe it. Have trouble talking to people? Well, you don't have trouble talking to them. They just have trouble understanding you, right? Get those hands up. Don't want to admit it. So some of you are starting is starting to sink in. You're starting to understand a little bit about yourselves. Very good. Next question. Got one right over here.
Okay, like on some of the gifts, like to me, I think like I have three. I don't know if I do or not, but I think I do. But anyways, is it possible, because you said like some of them, you were born with one, right? Is that what you said, right? Okay. Is it possible that the others you got as you were growing and observing and stuff like that?
Exactly what I'm saying.
But
it's acquired, right.
If there's something that you did acquire that you do not like, how can you, like, not do that?
If you're saying, I'm a prophet and I'm blunt, how do I get rid of that? Forget it. It ain't going to happen. If you're saying, I'm a giver and I'm a thief, that's different. Each of these characteristics are balanced. There's a real balance to them, positive, negative side. And as you're reading through that, it's important to see that. You're either expressing the positive side in positive foundational characteristics of each of those gifts, or you're expressing some of the negatives. For every negative side, for every negative problem that you're exhibiting, there is a positive counterbalance to it. Everything that God created was good in the beginning. Satan and man came along and polluted it, twisted it. But man and Satan have not created anything. They've merely twisted or perverted something that God made. Your task, whether it's for yourself or someone else, is to identify what their gift is, what the particular characteristic under their gift that they're having a problem with, what the positive part of that characteristic is, how they've twisted it. I know this is getting real complex, especially for a server. How they twisted it, and once you've learned how they twisted it, then as an exhorter you can come back and say, here's how you straighten it again. Kind of a complex answer. Maybe but sometime on Saturday we'll get into a greater detail about how to do that. But it is a very good question. Yes, we have these characteristics. We develop these characteristics from birth. Each one of these gifts has seven characteristics in them, under them, that form the foundation for those gifts. Each of those seven characteristics or foundational qualities or characteristics have a positive side and a negative side. The negative side is the twisting and the perversion that we've done with the positive side of the gift. We need to get it straightened out. Then we go to the positive side to do that. Sometimes it's difficult to find the positive side. Do you want an illustration, or are you happy with that? You're happy with it. Good. I won't give you an illustration because it gets off subject. Next question.
Say you are a server.
Okay. Yeah, I'm an exhorter, though.
Okay. Say I'm a server.
Yeah, let's say you're a server.
Okay. And due to a circumstance in my life, say a death, a divorce, or whatever, you know, a traumatic.
I sure do.
Can I pick up the characteristics of, say, an exhorter with the bluntness and the physical and all that?
What you would do as a server, just say there was a traumatic event that took place in your life, what you would have a tendency to do is you may stay strictly within your group, or you may start going to some of the other gifts and pulling out other attributes that you focus on in your life. As a server, though, typically what a server is going to do is they do not want to talk about emotional things. They want to deal with conflict. They want to hide themselves. They want to go get busy doing something physical because they can't deal with emotional things. So it's very rare for a server to pick up and try and go out here and grab an emotional point of view and work with it, because it's really alien to where they normally come from. They can do it because, as I said, the server is the only one that can operate in all seven gifts at a very shallow level. It's the only one that can do that. But they can't just say you have a server and this server is put in a position where there's a lot of problems going on and they need to exhort other people. Yeah, they can do that. They can do it for a short period of time. which reminds me, brings me back to something else. How do you tell if you've got, just say you took a test and it shows that you're equal on, you mark the seven characteristics under one and seven characteristics under another. How do you know which is instinctive and which is secondary? There is a way. When I take my test, I score 80% on exhorter. Invariably, I'll score either 79 or 80% as a teacher. So which am I, exhorter or teacher? Exhorters can counsel and counsel and counsel. They can talk endlessly with people one-to-one or in group situations. Teachers can get up and talk endlessly in a group like this. They can teach endlessly. You put an exhorter in the position of being a teacher, my limitations are normally, I can only speak about 30 or 40 minutes, and I start getting really agitated. And this is a second hour, people. But that's how I know that instinctively I'm an exhorter and not a teacher. I can function as a teacher, have a lot of those characters. I love to research. I love to read, not dictionaries, but encyclopedias. I jump from task to task like the teachers do. But when it comes, I start teaching, 30 or 40 minutes, it's my limitation. I just sort of fall off. And I guess the only reason I can explain that I'm still up here is the Spirit's got something to do with it. Because normally I can't do this. Normally my sessions are 30 to 40 minutes and then I'm it. That's gone. I can't say anymore. But that's, again, that's the instinctive quality. That's the instinctive characteristic. And that's how I know internally which of the two I am. I've acquired the teacher part of it. I've acquired a real taste for research. Normally exhorters don't do that, but I've acquired that over years. I enjoy that, but it is acquired. I wasn't born like that. My mother can tell you that for sure. I was in the fourth grade before I learned my multiplication tables, and that was only because she was, no, I won't tell you what she was doing. Other questions? Yes.
How can I have this help me, because I'm a school teacher, and, you know, help me, like, can it help me, like, to discipline the children if I find out what they are?
Ask me about the discipline part on Saturday, so I'm going really a lot of detail about that, but let me answer the first part for you.
Okay.
As a teacher, it's very important to know what the gifts of your children are. In fact, is when a teacher comes in and they're counseling for some other purpose, I tell them, you're a school teacher, you need to learn these gifts. Because a child learns 10 times as fast when you're teaching them according to their gifts. And they learn 10 times as slow when they're teaching them not according to their gifts, which is a real problem. Just say you as a teacher, you're a teacher, and there is a server student here, and you're wanting that server child to read this book, and that server saying, I don't read. I don't want to read. And so you say to yourself, how do I get them to read? Well, there is a way to do that. We'll talk about that later. But yes, it is imperative as a school teacher that you learn to guess what yours are and then learn what your children's are, because once you know, then what you can do is you fit your lessons to fit the child. And with a server child, how do you teach them? You give them things to do. You show them. If you got a mathematical equation you're going to teach them, then you put it in a physical term for them. I think you got a second question you want to ask about that. Go ahead and ask it.
Could this be something that I could share with my principal, though she's real far from being a Christian?
Sure. There is a part of when you talk to people who are non-Christians, you tell them, once you understand these gifts and you understand what happens with a child, and you explain to them, let me tell you, and you understand what her gift is, and let me, what's her first name? Your principal's first name. Say it again.
Celia.
Okay, you say, look, let me, what's her gift, by the way, do you know?
Let's just say
she's a prophet. Let's just say she's a prophet. Let me tell you some things about yourself. You're very blunt, you're very to the point. Being right and wrong is very important to you. You want your children to be right. That's why you're very hard on them, because you want them to be right. And you're sitting there, and you sit there, and you tell her 10 or 15 characteristics of herself, and she says, I just heard you yesterday, how do you know all that? and you say to her, how I knew that is very important, because if I can share with you how I learned that, then hopefully you will want to share it to these other teachers, and they can use it with their kids, because it's very important in learning things about them. And if you've done that effectively with her, yeah, she'll love to hear it. Love to hear it. Next question. Okay.
What happens when you have two prophets? One parent
murder,
and one child.
Cain and Abel. No.
I mean, how do you deal with a child?
Beat them to death every day. No. You have two prophets, which brings up a very interesting fact about them. I haven't mentioned it. I'm glad you brought it up, because I was supposed to mention it in the introductory part, and I completely forgot. It's extremely important. Very important. Birth order has a significant effect on motivational gifts. There is all the difference in the world between a firstborn prophet and a secondborn prophet. It is amazing how two prophets can be so different, and yet it's strictly because of their birth order. Excellent question. I'm glad you were. Do you see what I mean when I told you bring up a question and it really sparks something that's very, very important? That is a perfect example. So what does birth order have to do with the motivational gifts? Or while you're asking questions, what does sin have to do with the motivational gifts? We've talked about that a little bit, but more importantly, what does a person's cycles have to do with motivational gifts? Amazing. We're going to talk about that in session 3. I'm glad you brought that up. I'd almost forgot it. Session 3, we're going to be talking about the influences of the birth orders on the motivational gifts and how it affects them. Any other questions you want to bring up before I forget what else I was supposed to? See, I get real forgetful after the first 30 minutes. Anything else? You see that question, how important that question was? Birth order? Oh, yeah, it makes a big difference. Huge difference. Yes, you had a question a while ago, and I meant to get to that. This will be the last one.
Well, she asked a question on the two prophets.
Yes.
And my question is, what do you think about a prophet and an exhorter? I mean, they're both leaders, and their strengths, you know. And when they disagree on something, you know.
If you're trying to deal with, and they're your children, by the way, you deal with it differently if they're not your children. But if they're your children, you have a prophet and exhorter. How you deal with them, you have to take in consideration their birth order. Very important. Very good question. We'll come back to that in this next section. If I don't answer it as fully as you want me to during this next session, be sure and ask another question about it. Because, as I said, birth order, very important. Tremendous effect on the motivational gifts. Okay, this ends session 2. And session 3 will begin in a little bit. Thank you.